Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Punaktu Sahabiryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastomavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Page 12, Chapter 17, Lord Krishna's description of the Varnashram system. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. One enters an ashram according to one's qualification. If he has desires, he becomes a householder. If he has no desire, by having purified his heart, he becomes a vanaprastha. It means by purifying the heart, just because he doesn't have any desire, but his heart's not pure, that's not a qualification. Right? Because as soon as you come in contact with something that you consider desirable, then the desire will come up. He becomes a vanaprastha. If he's a brahmana and is without desire, he becomes a sannyasi. So he sees that traditionally is that specifically those with that brahminical mentality in that kind of, but they would go in for sannyas. Others would just go for vanaprastha. They're both considered very solid positions. You leave your body in either one of those, they're considered solid. It's not recommended you leave as a grihastha. Like that. One should move on to the vanaprastha sannyas ashram. If some desire to do so, they may go through all ashrams. After brahmachari life, one becomes a householder, then vanaprastha, and finally a sannyasi. One should not enter the ashrams in reverse order, and one should not be without an ashram unless one is my devotee. So that means if he's a devotee, he can be without an ashram, not that the devotee can go in the reverse order. Like that.
To be without ashram means what? Means paramahamsa?
Either you're above or below.
Yes.
You know. So that's the whole thing, is that traditionally, is if you're not above, then you would function within. But even if someone's from a background where they're not, they can't so much relate to the varnashram system, then as long as they follow the principles given, you know, and practice a devotional service and apply that into their lifestyle, it'll still work. Because devotional service being above these things, it still functions. It doesn't mean material life will go nicely for them. But their devotional life will progress. Right? But it's understood that they're functioning below the system. Someone in that position shouldn't claim that because we're devotees it doesn't matter and it's all the same. In fact, it's better because I'm just being natural and all that. That's unnecessary. That's then adding in the, you know, false ego based on attachments and trying to bring one's position below Varnashram up to equal to, if not better than. Mm-hmm. One shouldn't do that. One should respect the system. One should respect the Vedic literatures. But the devotee still can, because like, in general, devotees, like the ashram side, devotees kind of follow, but the varna side, they don't so much. Even on the ashram, it can be a bit flexible. Not in terms of other aspects, just what they're using, what they're doing. You see grihasthas that are too detached, you know, then brahmacharis that have so much facility, and, you know, these different things that aren't necessarily there, or those that just don't even bother. They're just there at their house, they do what they do, eat what they eat, and everything like that. Live their lifestyle, but they chant, they have faith, they do devotional service. So, only devotees can function in that way that's not exactly your, you know, textbook function. But then it's because of its relationship to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you might have that brahmacharya that has so much facility because he's doing these big preaching and things like that. Like, I remember, it was in England, what was his name? Tribhuvanath, I think. Yeah. You know, he had buses and parties and so many people, and they had their own separate thing. They didn't actually function, I think, under a temple. They were under the yatra. Yeah. They were just, you know, like a temp, but they were on their own. Mm-hmm. And they traveled there. They traveled in Africa. They just did whatever they needed to do. So they were very independent, had their own money, had their own facilities, had like this. So typically you wouldn't expect brahmacharis to do that, but it was just engaged in sankirtan, so it's fine. Like that. So it's not theirs. So then, you know, for them being brahmacharis is then fine, because it's not theirs. That they would just, they're not in matted locks and kopans and sitting out in the middle of the forest, right? You know, like that. So it's a very straightforward aspect, but one just has to be careful that the purpose in situating yourself is pure devotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it says the goal is pure devotion, you're committed to that, but because there's material desire, therefore one enters household life.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's not material desire, he doesn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Or there is material desire, but one thinks that the social prestige and position of not entering is better. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. Yes.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentions that those who are born outside of Varnashram system shouldn't worry about it, just invest all of their energy into sadhana bhakti.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah, that's what they should do. But then when they don't do that, they follow their own lifestyle, don't really absorb themselves in that, and then try to claim that they're in a better position. That's not what the acharyas talk about.
Well, everybody understands they're not in a better position because it's outside of the system.
Yeah, but they shouldn't talk like it is. That's my point. So that's the whole point. It doesn't matter as long as they're trying to do everything close to Krishna and get as close as possible. Because even within the Vedic system, let's say a Shudra, then he doesn't necessarily have the sadhana and that of the others. But if he's trying to do that, it's considered glorious. Right? Because it's a higher position. So the ashram standards, that's always something that you can go for. But on the varna side, you don't even worry about it. Because generally within the society, devotees fit fairly nicely within the ashrams. The varnas, then that's a bit of a gray area. So in that sense, you could say they're below, but he's talking here specifically about ashrams. So in ashrams, you see, as Prabhupada very nicely established it, and then you have those that are, you know, pujaris and preachers and that, so you see that. So what's Prabhupada hadn't, you could say, not hadn't, but had given direction for, but hadn't specifically, formally established, was Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. But otherwise, 5 out of 8 are established. So when some say, well, Prabhupada didn't establish Varnashram, it's 5 out of 8, and it's the 5 most important out of the 8.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, that's, you would have to say by way, it's there. And so spiritually you get the benefit because the ashrams are the spiritual side, while the varnas are the social side. So he did establish the brahminical occupations, but then those are also spiritual. Right? Because you see, if someone's preaching or these kind of aspects, doing puja and that, it's nicely established. But let's say that they're doing samskars or teaching or doing these other things like that, that's not very well established.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But the directly spiritual aspects of the brahminical are. So then you just do the best you can. You have your job, you go to it, you get your money, you come to the temple, you take part, you chant, you do what you can. It doesn't really matter. And basically, if you want to use that one as a model, then you probably say that most fit into that.
Yeah.
So it works. It's not a problem. But if they don't also fit into the ashram side, that's where you'll see some problem will come up. You know, you'll see more of a difficulty there. But generally, most devotees all accept the ashram side of it. There is a little bit of gray area when it comes to the bachelors, like that. But generally, the brahmacharis, the grihastas, the vanaprastha is a little, it's not so clear, but you kind of, it's developing. Sannyasi's clear, like that. But I'm saying if the vanaprastha is not so clear, it doesn't really matter. You know, like that. You know, how much grihastha they are, how much vanaprastha they are. It's you know, it's progressive. Just the bachelor ashram is not very progressive. Like that. Right? From what I understand, it only works if you're a lawyer and you are Italian and you live with your mother. Then it'll work. Other than that, then, yeah, it doesn't work so good.
And she's cooking.
And she's cooking, of course. That's the whole point. That's 100% the point.
Now, can we expect that in our society, with the time, everything is...
Yeah, with time, it'll all establish. Because it's just a matter of the modes of nature that we're accustomed to. And the purity that we're working in. So when there's this, the pure, when someone is brought up in the atmosphere of, you know, goodness and pure goodness, then these things will function much more easily. So you see over the generations, because first generation, just that they're, you know, following the Four Regular Principles and chanting Hare Krishna, that's so different from their background and upbringing and everybody they know. So if they only do that much, it will take them back to Godhead. Their children then will be exposed to more of the things like that, but because of the association with the first generation like that, then, you know, some will get more, some will get less like that. Then you'll see with the third generation, that's where you'll start seeing more kind of fixed in that. So depending upon how serious they are, then you'll see it more clear in the third generation, or it may take till the fourth if it's a little slower. Like that. But you'll see a time. Someone mentioned that Prabhupada had said that all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge will be reestablished. Mm-hmm. So the knowledge is there, it's just a matter of it being the right time and it's revealed and all these things. Mm-hmm. Like that. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because otherwise, how do you have a golden age if it's not so golden?
Preparing.
Huh?
Preparation.
Yes. So that's the thing. We're still in the pioneering stage. And that. So then it's glorious. One commits to that and tries one's best. It's glorious. Because the point is to remember Krishna and go back to Godhead. We're not trying to perfect Varnashram. It's just the Varnashram is the best system to function within. Because even though, let's say, the devotees, and they're there and they're committed to Krishna consciousness, how much social difficulty do they have? Social, economic, you know, personal problems, family problems, all these different things, that distracts them from their service and their sadhana. So the idea is the Vedic system won't be distracting. Not on the negative. On the positive, yes, but not on the negative. Does that make sense? But if the focus is on the direct activities of devotional service, then that distraction will be minimal. You know, so the example we see of all those great kings in sixth canto, you know, Priyavrata, Rishabdev, and Bharat Maharaj and all that. So great devotees, but all grihasthas and performing all their duties. So there's not a problem like that. Not that we can't make a problem, but there isn't one. Like that. So, yeah. If one is a devotee, then one does not have to follow the rules of ashrama. This will be explained later. If the devotee enters ashrams in a different order or has no ashram, there's no fault. Right? So, you know, it's just like, let's say, just for example, someone has grown up, you know, the first generation, then means even if we're just looking at it from the point of four ashrams, we're not looking at outside. What ashram are they in when they join?
Grihastha,
right? Because they never had proper brahmachari training. So they're going from grihastha then back into brahmachari. You know, like that. So it's not that there won't be problems. So for the devotees, it's not as important simply because they're so absorbed in Krishna. But if you use this as an excuse, oh, we don't have to do, right there, you have to stop the person saying that. That's the wrong attitude. It means we're trying, and if it doesn't work out, it still works. Right? But it doesn't mean that materially it will work for you. Like that. Does that make sense? That's the...
And this is mean, the devotee has no ashram? That means he reaches the stage of Paramahamsa, something like that?
That means if he is Paramahamsa, but like we said, he may be below Paramahamsa. He may be below Varnashram. So he's just kind of, how you say? Yeah. Purified Western kind of situation. Like when you're cooking, you cook the same prep, just take out the onions and garlic. That's all. So. Hard ball. You know, just like water. You know water? You can cook them without onions. It's an amazing fact. In fact, when I came to India, no one put waters in onions. Like that. But starting in the 80s, then it started to creep in. And now it's just, of course, you put onions in waters. Amazing but true.
You can put cabbage.
Yeah, you can put cabbage. Verses 39 to 58, the Grihastha Ashram. Speaking of the rules for the householder, rules of Varna are discussed. Shout out to Darshini 11:17:39. Right? Because when you say Grihastha Ashram, you can discuss the Varnas at that point, because it's only the Grihasthas have Varna. The Brahmacharis, Vanaprastha, Sannyas technically don't. They don't have duties of Varna. They may be within a Varna, but they don't have duties of a Varna. Does that make sense? Sri Krishna continued, one who desires to establish family life should marry a wife of his own caste, who is beyond reproach and younger in age. Okay. So own caste means own nature. Like that. That's what has to be seen. I mean, the easiest is whatever background you're from, someone from that same kind of background, and that works very nicely in India. Because you can say that. You can say what your goat or your background, you can say all these things. And if you can't, then you fall into the same thing that the Westerners have. But the Westerners, they don't really know. Right? It's just they're kind of doing things. So, then you have to see that there's equal nature. There's a similar nature. So if one's from different kinds of means, it could be from similar backgrounds, like same country, same kind of social status, then from there you work it out, or if they're different, but you have to see that there's equality in nature. Like, let's say someone's from one background, someone's another, but they both have Brahminical nature. Then from there, now you see if it'll match. Right, so that's why I probably would recommend using the charts and things like that, because then you can see from the beginning if it can work. Right? So the point is, charts will show you whether it can work or not. Whether it will work is depending upon if you commit yourself to it. Like that. Yes.
Many devotees nowadays, they marry, one is from one continent, another is from another continent. And when the question is asked, you know, where's the compatibility in nature, they say, well, devotional service is the most important, the most powerful, so we're both devotees. On that basis, we can do it. Is that a valid argument?
If they can keep that mentality at all times, all places, all circumstances, then yeah, why not? Yeah, then the point is, why marry? If the only common point, why this one? I mean, why marry someone? So all the devotees are doing devotional service. You can just you know, hang out with everybody and chant and dance and take prasad and hari bol. Why get married? Because one has to remember you're marrying the bodies, not the souls. I think that's a very, it's not a well contemplated point. Right? The souls aren't getting married. The gross and subtle bodies are. So you have to see that they match. You know, it's just like, let's say, in a meal. We have a glass, right? We have a plate. We have a bowl. We have a spoon. We have a knife. We have a fork. So they're all part of the meal, but that doesn't mean that they match. You don't use the knife in the cup. Even if you want to stir something, you use the spoon. You don't use the knife. You know what I'm saying? So like that. You have the napkin is there. You know, you use that with that. You don't wipe your face with the plate. You know, you know, put the samosa on the napkin and wipe with the plate. And then, you know, yeah, you don't do that. So the whole point is there has to be compatibility. That's why it always says equal nature. That they're both devotees, and that's naturally that. Yes, is the most important. But marriage is a secondary thing. It says concerning desire. Those desires will be secondary. You don't get married because you want to develop pure unalloyed devotion for Krishna. That's not why you get married. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's the secondary. So then they have to see that the secondary is compatible. That the first primary is compatible, that's very good. Because naturally, if there's a devotee, you marry a devotee. But you also have to see that the secondary match. Otherwise, then you know, because marriages probably don't break up because of pure devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it'll be that one wants to get up early, one doesn't. Or if they're getting up early, how early? You know? Stuff like that's going to be more the thing, or if they get up at all, or where do you squeeze the toothpaste from? Stuff like that. You know, these are the things that you know. Those are the elements. What you eat, you know, what schedule you follow, you know, how money, how you know, children, no children, all these kind of things. These are the things that are going to drive you nuts. Right? The other stuff is not. You know. Unless, of course, when they're trying to talk to you and you're chanting your japa or something and just absorbed in the holy name, you know, like that.
That's very annoying.
Yeah. So, because the Grihastha ashram is the most, you could say, complex of all the situations in Varnashram, therefore it has the most considerations. So just that we're devotees, it's enough. If you can make that work, great. But then that means that the two individuals, besides being, you know, just their devotees, they're very committed to whatever they do. And so because they've married this person, they're committed to that. And no matter, you know, how you say, hell or high water, they're going to make it work. Then, yes, it can work. But that's because they have that equal commitment. But if one has that commitment and the other doesn't, it won't work. You know. Does that make sense? Because being a great grihastha or not has nothing to do with how nice a devotee you are. Does that make sense? You can have somebody who's a nice devotee, has no idea and can't relate, doesn't know. But if you put them with someone else who is in the same kind of headset that doesn't relate and all that, you know, then they would be fine. Like that. You know, it's just like you see sometimes, you don't see so often, but sometimes you see pictures of really pukka Brahmin women wearing their saris and all that, but if you look at it, they're not worn very well. One size higher, one size lower, and this and that, and they don't notice. They just technically put it on, you know, put it on, and it's done in the right way in the tradition. But these little details they don't notice, and so the Brahmin men are basically the same, and so they work really well together, right? But you see, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, they'll dress everything's exactly pukka, You know, you look at the pictures of the kings and the big, you know, things like that. Everything's very, very like that. So they wouldn't be able to relate to the other things. So that's what I'm saying, is that it's not going to be that. It's that they don't relate to the outside world. You marry someone who can't relate to the outside world, and then you can, how you say, not relate to the outside world, you know, together. You know, something, you know, if that makes sense. And so they're both spaced out, so it works. But if one's spaced out, one's not, then there's a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah, certain things have to be the same, just like you have the Asuric Manusha and the Deva. That's like how technical you can be, or how detailed you can be. So two Devas, then they're very into detail. It'll work for them. Two Manushas will work. Two Asuras will work. But if you mix them, it'll always be a problem, because one will be more detailed than the other. It'll always drive each other nuts. You know what I'm saying? Like you walk into, you know, like so they're back. Their Asura doesn't mean that they're Asuras. It just means according to the nature that the planet's like that. You walk in, their house looks like a bomb hit it, and they're both perfectly comfortable, and they don't feel embarrassed. You know, it's not like they don't care. It's just that that's there, and their friends will be like that, and they'll all be cool. You know what I'm saying? So it works. But if one likes it to be really nice and the other one doesn't care, then that's just going to be grating from the beginning. Is that something? So it's important, because if you're trying to fulfill material desires, you should be able to do that. Or be very comfortable that no material desire will be able to be fulfilled, and from that then you give up your attachment to it and move forward in Krishna consciousness. So you're very, very grateful to your partner that whatever they do has nothing to do with grihastha reality, you know, in connection with yourself, and by that you're becoming very inspired in Krishna consciousness. Is that an option of the group that you're talking about? No. Yes. So that's why then you try to make it match. You know, but it's, you don't go crazy, because I have god brothers to today in their 60s. They can't find that perfect match, because they've come across, but they're not perfect, and so they don't take, and they're still looking.
I guess it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Prabhupada mentioned that to some of the girls. He says, the only perfect match, yeah, it's Krishna. Yeah. He's the perfect.
They're not looking at the right place.
Yes, they're not looking in the right place. You got to go to the temple room. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Because as perfect as you can get is 92% compatibility. You can't get 100%. It doesn't exist. Like that. Astrologically, it's designed that 92 is the maximum. Because that 8%, that's what creates the interest. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like looking in the mirror, you know. How are you today? Yeah, not bad, you know. How long do you do that? Right? You know? Yeah, so that's the whole point. Is that 24 hours of that? No, it's not going to happen. So it's designed, the charts, for that. There are some things that they have to match, like we said, the Varna. Varna here means that Asura, Daiva, or the other. Then, but one of them, it has to be exact opposite. There's certain things, like let's say, if one's born in January, the other should be born in June. You know, or February, July, like this. Because then it's exactly opposite. So that will spark conversation, because if it's exactly the same, how long can you sit alone and not talk? Right? You know what I'm saying? If you're just with yourself all day, you don't need to talk. So that's the thing. If they're exactly the same, then but they won't create any conversation. So there's certain things that are opposite, so that it sparks that. And then other things are... Does that make sense? So the way the charts are set up, that's to see that all that's there. You know, just that it works out. And that, and I think the Maitri gets 8 points out of... You have 8 things, And the first one's worth eight points, and the second one's 7 points, 6 points, down to one. You add that all up, I think you get 32.
36.
Huh? 36. 36, okay. And so then the point is that the first one is, I think, is Maitri, is how friendship. Just are they comfortable with each other just as friends? Companionship. So that's the most important in the marriage. Like that. And then from there it goes down. Like I'm not sure where it is. Sexual kind of compatibility, I think. Yeah, but that's like down at, yeah, it's like the fourth one down. So it's right in the middle. You know, so it's not like the modern, they look at that one. And then when that kind of wears out, then if the friendship and others aren't there, then the relationship does also. So, yeah. So it is important because, you know, at the end of the day, that companionship that's the common point. Right? Because in the friendship is the common thing between souls. Right? So if that companionship is there on the conditioning, because that's what you're marrying, then it works very well. So if no matter what the situation, you can hang out with that person, that's a good relationship. Right? Because already that's 25% of the whole thing. All the other 7 points are the other 75. Right? 1 point is 25%. Like that. So like that, then it comes down. And especially with devotees, you worry about this end more. Karmis are worried more about the middle. So. Is it okay? Or? Yeah? We're good?
When devotees get married without checking the horoscopes.
When devotees get married without checking the horoscopes.
Yeah.
Then they should never check the horoscopes. They got married and they didn't check, don't check.
Yes. And then things don't work well. No. However, the woman.
However, that's another form of two.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
That's Vedanta Sutra style.
Yes.
So. Then the lady, usually it's been seen that she takes a lot of shelter of Krishna, and the bhakti, she tries to keep the marriage. So can we say that it is because of bhakti only we can attribute that the marriage can go on, and no matter what the chart may speak of?
Basically, approaching from that kind of angle that because of the bhakti, you can make it work, is not a strong position. Not that they can't, but the point is that what's going to make it go on is the qualities that someone has. Because if there's no commitment, there's no other things, it doesn't matter how much bhakti you have, it's just not going to work. Because if you approach it from that angle, then the tendency is that over devotees, it doesn't matter. Because Prabhu's mentioning that, but every community I've ever been in, each community says that. Right? Especially when they follow the modern, where you get together, see if it's okay, and if you think it's a go, then you check the charts. And then when you find out the charts are terrible, then this is the first point they'll make. Well, but we're devotees, we're transcendental. It says, then why are you getting married? You know?
They usually say association will be easy then.
Association, what association?
It will be at home itself.
You have a devotee to hang out with 24 hours now.
That's
just happens to be of your
See, it's like this. If you're going to be, you know, dating, right?
Uh-huh.
Right? So, when do you date?
Free time.
Hmm? In the free time. So Monday through Friday, well, Friday night, okay, but basically you're busy. So that leaves you Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. Right?
What is dating first?
What is dating first? You have this one kind of palm tree. There are these big fronds and that. They put out a huge amount of this kind of fruit. It's called a date. Right?
That I know.
Yes, so that's what we're talking about. Yeah, that's it's a great thing. Dating means this modern concept where men and women spend time together to get to know each other before they decide whether they're going to commit to a relationship.
That's the only quality time they spend together before they commit.
Yes. You understand? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, that method, then the difficulty comes up is you're only spending when you do have free time. So you get up, you live your life the way you do, you spend the money the way you want to do, you dress the way you want to do, you do everything the way you want to do, and then when it's this quality time together, then you focus on the other person because you want to make a good impression. Mm-hmm. Then, as Prabhu pointed out, once they get married, now it's 24/7, so now it is over, you know, who's using the bathroom, what you do in the bathroom, how much mess you make in the bathroom, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And so then, now they start to drive each other nuts. Plus now you have to make it work. While before, especially if you're younger, your mother and father are paying the bills. But once you get married, you're paying the bills, not them. So it's an inferior system, though extremely popular. There's this thing that, oh, if I get to know, then I'll really know. The charts, what do they know? Like that. Mm-hmm. And so then they always have this problem. But the problem is that, you know, you check the charts first, and then based on that, then you try to make matches. So it's like, Prabhupada, you know, it's time to get married. His father comes with two options of people he could marry that, you know, all these things that are talked about, that Krishna will talk about, is correct. And then he can choose.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense? You know, so like that. So then it works out nicely. Because then you just have to commit yourself and then apply. Because otherwise, when you say, oh, we associate, get to know each other, they'll never get to know each other. Guaranteed. 100%. They'll never get to know. Quirks in this, but what they actually are feeling, what they this and that, who asked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because if you put a boy and girl together, unless they're completely not connected, Then it's always going to generate some kind of nice feeling. It's just the nature of how it works. And because of that nice feeling, though, it must be good, and like this, it'll just get better, and everything like that, and it doesn't.
Mm.
Right, you have to remember, you pay Bollywood, they don't pay you. Yeah, so therefore they're making the money, not you. So, right? They just sell what you want to hear. Right? That makes sense? You know? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything is a dream only.
Yeah, that's it. You know, now you don't have, but if it's Chopra film that has Ronnie and Shah Rukh in it, you're good. People are going to pay. Right? No? Because you know it's going to work out, right? Has to. Yes. So now, Krishna will continue. So that was the first sentence. Right? Notice we're moving so fast because it's that, you know, technical, high-grade philosophy. Wow, we're doing 15 pages, 17 pages. Now we get back into Varnashram. You know, we've already spent half the class on one sentence. Okay. One who desires to establish family life should marry a wife of his own caste who is beyond reproach and younger in age. Oh, actually, we only dealt with the first half of the sentence. Sorry. Okay. Beyond reproach, it means the character is understood, it's known, like that. Because if you've been trained in all that, and you have that, then there should be a matching. Because remember, he's talking about the brahmacharya who's been trained, all those qualities that he has with the spiritual master, he has those. And so therefore, then the girl has to be in a similar kind of mood. Like that. Though she's been to training at the home and all those kind of things like that. And then you know it's nice. Like that.
Younger in age marriage?
Younger in age.
So important?
Why is that important? Yeah, because here's Krishna saying this, so he can't say, no, it doesn't apply, it's Kali Yuga. No, we're devotees. And, yeah, this is 11th canto. Yeah. We're younger in age. Very simple point. When do girls start playing house?
Young.
Yes. When do boys even start thinking that such a concept even exists? When they bump into a girl that they think maybe they should get serious about. What is the age difference between when the girl started thinking about...
Yeah.
So that's not too weird. That's why it said 10 years. Like that. But younger. It's like it's between 10 and 3. 3 is considered the ideal minimum. Like that. Because, you know, the modern is their equal, same age. But the problem is the boy is just now thinking, well, we should get a house. The girl already knows what kind of house, what kind of curtains, what kind of furniture, what kind of this and that, what kind of program she's having, everything about it, you know, this for the kids, that for the laundry, that. She's already thought about it. That's why there has to be an age gap. Because, in other words, he's already mature enough, he can provide that, but the girl hasn't thought up too many things. You know, so it's compatible. How much money he can make and organize is only how much she's thought up. Well, if they're more equal age, there's no question he can get together what she's dreamed of. You know, if she's younger, she wants curtains. When she's older, she wants silk curtains. Not these ones, the Italian ones. You understand? So that's why there's a difference in age. So if they're younger, then the difference can be closer. When you start to get older, then you want a little bit more. Because, does that make sense? Because she's... So, like you see, Abhimanyu, he's getting married, he's 16. So then if his wife is, you know, 14, 13, 12, it'll work. You know, the age is closer. Does that make sense? But as you start to get older, then you'll see that, you know, it's just like, let's say, sometimes you see in these older, yeah, let's say, very, worldly experienced women, you know, that they've very sophisticated and all this and just like that, that they may be like 30, so they're quite, you know, solid and all that, but you'll see that many times they end up with these men that are in their 50s, 60s who are, you understand, because just there's enough difference that this guy's got, you know, the facilities to actually take care of what she's thinking of at 30. You know what I'm saying? Not ideal, because, you know, 10 years he'll be 70 and she'll be 40, so she'll still be okay and he'll be falling apart. But, yeah. You know, it just depends upon what the, you know, how you say, how well the prenup has been written, you know, like that. Who gets the advantage, right? You know, who's the beneficiary of the life insurance and, you know, stuff like that, you know. If it's the cat, then don't get involved. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. If you have that difference in age, then it works. Otherwise, then because the boy's not thinking of this emotional platform and that until marriage, basically. So if the girl is too developed in that, then he'll be too far behind. So that's why you want to see his equal nature. She'll know how to bring him up to speed, and there's a difference in age, so that it'll kind of work out. Does that make sense? Yeah. You have to remember it's the elephant in the water in this. So, right. You understand? How big is an elephant? How big is a crocodile?
Smaller.
Yeah, but in the water? Mm. Yeah, so that's the whole point. Does that make sense? Yeah. If one desires to accept many wives, he must marry them after the first marriage. Right? He can't marry them all at once. Or he can't marry them before the first marriage. That was really not recommended. You know, the girl and I said, yeah, you know, we should get serious and all that. Yeah, just a... one day I bring up as, you know, my other three girlfriends. And each wife should be of a successively lower caste. Mm-hmm. like that. It means, and it has to be married in that order. Brahman, then Kshatriya, then Vaishya. You can't reverse the order or anything like that.
Can they all be Brahmins?
Yeah, can be. But yeah, just like you see the kings, they marry Kshatriyas and like this. But the point is that it's after the first, but the first wife is the main one. However many it is. So therefore formal occasions, formal things like that, she's the main one. Like that. So that it always works. So you see, is the problem came up with Dhruva Maharaj, with his mother, because she was actually the main wife, but the second wife, she was taking that position. So it just creates difficulty. So that's why there's rules on these things. You know, like I mentioned before this morning about second married woman. She goes into a already existing situation. Mm-hmm. So she has to adjust with that. She doesn't like that situation, don't get married. Don't get involved. But this idea is that my first marriage didn't work, I go into the second one, I will make the second one, you know, now work. You know, all the things I wanted from the first. You can't do that. No, because it's already a different situation. Right? If it's completely new, clean, there's no children on either side, and this and that, then it can work that way. But if there's already children, you can't do that. Does that make sense? Especially if the man has children, then that means they already have relationships, they already have their mother, they have ways of dealing with the father, the way they sit down and eat and call. You just have to fit into that. Like that. Does that make sense? And if you do, then it's a very nice situation. But if one doesn't, it just becomes, you know, how you say? Hell.
Cancel and grapple. Cancel and fairy tale. The stepfather kicked the kids out in the forest.
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, because she was the new. Yeah. Also, you see Cinderella? Same thing. Like that. Like she already had kids, came in, those already there, she came in, tried to take over the whole scene, she did. Yeah, so it's a problem. So that's why ideally these things aren't addressed, because very few can do it properly. That's why it's not recommended. We'll say, oh, well, what's wrong with this and that, because generally it doesn't work. Like that, because people just can't relate to the new, how you say? The already existing situations. If they can do that, then it'll be very, very nice. But if they can't, so that's why it's not recommended. Not that it doesn't happen, but it's not recommended. Does that make sense? Because the idea is the spiritual life, is that you're going into the spiritual life. And because you don't want to jeopardize that, you don't want to create an unpleasant situation in the home. Because that unpleasant situation tends to people get moody, this, that, they don't chant, they don't do their things like that. So that's the whole idea, is it's supportive of. So one is very, very careful about these things. Does that make sense? So Manu doesn't recommend it, but he says it can be there. Parasara will talk more about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's going to be rules like that. Does that make sense? There's no children. You know, then that's one kind of flavor. But if there is children, it will be very different. Right? Because let's say, the first marriage, then she's the lady of the house. The second marriage, she's the wife of her husband. She's not necessarily the mother of the children or the one controlling the house or anything like that. If it develops in that way, fine. But she can't take it as automatic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like in the modern kind of cliche where you have the super rich father who's been through so many marriages like this, and his latest one that he comes up with, you know, the girl he's going to marry is younger than his son. And now, you know, then, you know, because in the Western thing, then she would be the mother, and so he's got to call her mother and all that. No, she's just the wife of his father. So he'll respect that, but as far as his life and these things, it's nothing to do with it. Does that make sense? So it's just, yeah. So it's a very different kind of scenario, and then trying to make all this work. It's a culture, and if that's appreciated, it can work very nicely. But if it's not, then it'll just be trouble. Yeah. So, well.
Yes.
Yeah, depending upon the piety or impiety, then there's nodding of heads or. What's he talking about? Okay. All twice born men, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must perform sacrifice, study the Vedic literature, and give charity. Right? So that's the common between all three of them. Only the Brahmins, however, accept charity, teach the Vedic knowledge, and perform sacrifice on behalf of others. Right? And get for that. That we as devotees, we preach and things like that, but it's preaching that we're teaching. It's not an occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter what our nature is, our varna, that we can teach because it's devotional service. But to do it as an occupation, then only Brahmins can. Right? That's why it's also this aspect, the devotees, that they don't have these positions, that doesn't really matter. Because they're doing things just for Krishna, so it doesn't, it's not important.
Accepting charity.
Generally, grihasthas, if they're not Brahmins, they don't accept. You know, people give something, they can get, like you see with Arjuna, he wouldn't accept charity. It means a gift from a friend, that's okay. But it couldn't be because of something he's done, therefore you're getting, and there couldn't be a remuneration. You know, it's like that with Chittaratha. Chittaratha wanted to give him something for, you know, just how nicely he dealt with him in the situation. But he says, no, I can't. He says, if you want to give it as a friend, I'll accept it as that. Because friends can give gifts to each other. But not that he's done something, therefore you give. No, Kshatriyas, they just do their duty. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if it's there and they just do, like, then you can always take that and use that for the deities or give it in charity or stuff. But you wouldn't use it for yourself. That kind of thing. You know, it's just like if you get bad money, you don't use it for yourself. You give it in charity. Is that? Yeah. Because once it's given to you, giving it to the next person, it won't carry that the bad element. But you didn't use it, therefore you don't get that bad element.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That makes sense.
Like that.
A Brahmin who considers that accepting charity from others will destroy his austerity, right? Because all these things, when you accept charity, all whatever you get, it destroys something. Like cloth is bad for your skin. Land, can't remember. Sesame seed, bad for your children. Land, all these different things, cows, they all have a definite, they remove something that you have because it goes to the other person. It gives a charity. So, therefore, he's saying if a Brahmin considers that accepting charity from others means he does this, patana patana yajana, he does that for others and gets paid for it. He doesn't want to do that. Then he says, okay, he considers it will destroy his austerity, spiritual influence, and fame, should maintain himself by the other two brahminical occupations. Right? So he doesn't get that. Namely, teach Vedic knowledge and perform sacrifice. Then something they get from that, it'll have less. If the Brahmin considers that those two occupations also compromise his spiritual position, then he should collect rejected grains in agricultural fields and live without any dependence on others. Right? So we see as even like Chanakya, even though he was the prime minister for the emperor, he didn't accept any facility from the king. He lived in his own place. He went out begging. He maintained himself. So then he's not under any obligation. So it's just a matter of the person, their position, you know, their potency. Then they'll choose what works. So, right, so then the first to go is the charity, and you keep teaching the Veda and doing sacrifices, and then that can go, if it's a problem. The body of a Brahmin is not intended to enjoy significant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahmin will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. A Brahmin householder should remain satisfied in mind by gleaning rejected grains from agricultural fields and marketplaces. Right? Because the normal thing is agricultural fields. But if you're in the places where there isn't so much, then the marketplaces are there. Right? Because after shop, when they close up shop, there's always some grains on the ground and this and that. You just collect that. Keeping himself free of personal desire, he should practice magnanimous religious principles with consciousness absorbed in me. In this way, a Brahmin may stay at home as a householder without very much attachment and thus achieve liberation. So magnanimous, that means they're glorious. They're meant for upliftment. They're not, how do you say? Oh. Are the sober looks created by the smoke?
No.
Huh? No. It's by the subject matter. Because I was trying to figure out, is this smoke or is this... Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Uncha means collecting grains which fall in the market. Shila is collecting grains from the field. Oh, that's why Uncha Shila. Uncha Shila. I think it's like that. I guess it means Uncha collecting grains that fall in the market. Shila is from the field. Satisfied with these occupations, he attains liberation. He should engage in receiving guests and be without desires. Remaining in the household ashram, he attains liberation. He receives guests, means whatever he has, that, you know, he uses. Like that. He doesn't worry if it's more or less. So it's just, you know, whatever he has. That's what... that makes sense? So he still maintains, not that, oh, we have nothing, we can't take care of guests. No, if somebody comes in, that's why it says, minimum, kind word, a grass asan, a glass of water. You know, that's the minimum. But, you know, if that's all you have, that's what you give. Sri Krishna continued. Right, so he's attaining liberation from the Grihastha ashram. That's the whole point, because there's no attachment to what he's dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
He performs his duties, but there's no attachment. Right? Sri Krishna continued. Just as a ship rescues those who have fallen into the ocean, similarly, I very quickly rescue from all calamities those persons who uplift brahmanas and devotees suffering in a poverty-stricken condition. Right? So then that naturally then becomes those who have facility, then they take care of the brahmins and that who don't have. And then Krishna very quickly, he just says, like the ship rescues the fallen ocean, he'll rescue those persons who are maintaining the Brahmins and that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, the result of serving with devotion Brahmanas by giving wealth is described. That's why you see in the Bhagavatam and that anytime they're doing something, they're doing so much of that. And you see, you know, what's the position of these personalities. It's so great, so pious, because that's their nature. The Lord saves not only persons who save Brahmins who are devotees, but also save those who save any devotee. Right, so that's the whole point. Is you have the Brahmin aspect, because even amongst devotees, then you know that the hearing, the chanting will go on nicely. Then all the different samskars and all the rites and all these things will go on nicely. But any devotee is dear to Krishna, like that. So it's Sri Krishna continued. Just as the chief bull elephant protects all other elephants in his herd and defends himself as well. Similarly, a fearless king, just like a father, must save all of the citizens from difficulty and also protect himself. Right? Because otherwise, if he's not protected himself, how does he protect others? Right? An earthly king who protects himself and all citizens by removing all sins from his kingdom will certainly enjoy with Lord Indra in airplanes as brilliant as the sun. Right? So that is what we see what Krishna was talking about of going into the Varna Dharma. Like we talked about the ashram, right? Mm-hmm. But then we see he's gone into the Brahmin, now the Kshatriya, ashram, I mean Varna Dharma. Mm-hmm. Because it's, as a Grihastha, they're dealing with these things. Mm-hmm. Like that. Right, so you see the glory. And here is that, you know, just what each, not that for the devotees they care about enjoying in airplanes as brilliant as the sun with Lord Indra, or that you'll be as brilliant as the sun hanging out with Lord Indra in an airplane, or, whatever it is. But in any case, that combination of, they're not worried about that as devotees. It's just showing that the greatness of it, just like for the Brahmins, they don't, the devotees, they don't care about liberation, but from such a lifestyle, they'll get liberation. Sri Krishna continued, if a Brahmin cannot support himself through his regular duties and is thus suffering, he may... So those were standard, right? The previous ones where he has the opportunity, he can perform these activities, he can study and teach the scriptures, he can perform the ceremonies like that, he can accept charity. If not, then he goes, you know, drops the charity, goes back to the teaching and performing yajnas. If that's the problem, then he goes back to just maintaining himself. Doesn't mean that he doesn't do these things. His own family will do, or he may teach, but he's not maintaining himself by that.
Yes.
Right? He's teaching, but then for free.
Yeah.
Like that. But then in that position, now, who are his students? If he's teaching for free, what quality of studentship can he demand?
Very high.
Very high. So there'll be no compromise, because he's living in this way and going to that because he doesn't want to compromise his lifestyle. You know, his consciousness of that. Therefore, then the students can be a very high consciousness. Very good quality. So you see, these kind of Brahmins, they only have a few students. But those students, generally you hear of their names in scripture. Like that. So then, you know, it works out. Like that, they say. Like a, what is it? Like Jayadwaita Maharaj. He only has like a couple of disciples. You know, but one of them is Kadambakanana Maharaj, who's a sannyasi and a guru. Right? So, you know, it works.
And quite active. Quite active.
Yeah. You know, so that's the whole point, is that the more you strict in your own personal, then the more strict you can be on the other. Like that. So, then if this is not available, then there's alternatives. So this is called times of distress. So if he can't maintain himself by his regular duties, then the suffering. Then it says he may adopt the occupation of a merchant and overcome his destitute condition by buying and selling material things, right? Mm. He doesn't mention farming.
Yes.
Like if the Brahmin is going to accept a Vaishya occupation,
yes,
farming is not the recommended one. Generally, we'll take it. No, we should do farm. No, it's not. Farming's for Vaishyas.
Yes.
You know, Vaishyas, their Shudras, like that.
Yes.
That's who it's for. But otherwise, Brahmins and Kshatriyas, then it's considered better they go into business. Because the other thing, the land, the thing, the greatness of it, the amount of work, the business that takes less work. Right? So it's more straightforward. So the Brahmin just, you know, and it's not that he's trying to, you know, start an empire here. He just wants to maintain his family. Like that. So. If he continues to suffer extreme poverty, even as a merchant, then he may adopt the occupation of a Kshatriya, taking sword in hand. You know, but that's what he has to do. But he cannot in any circumstance become like a dog, excepting an ordinary master. Right? So generally he'll never take a, you know, regular paid job. But in these days, and this is what was we were saying before, so many don't live within, and so many that I know have heard of, you know, Brahmins, head pujaris, yogi, you know, do all the samskars for the community. They work at Tesco's, you know, because they do all the samskars, but no one pays them anything. Oh, you're a Brahmin, you're supposed to do this for free, you know, like that. You know, oh, if you want money, oh, that's material, that's karma kanda, you know. And or I wouldn't want to give him a charity because then he might become puffed up and fall down. So for his spiritual benefit, I'll give him nothing. These are all direct quotes. Like that. Yes. Therefore, Tesco's. Tesco's appreciates the job done. What you've done, they'll reciprocate. You know, like Krishna. You know, yeah. Like that. A king or other member of the royal order who cannot maintain himself by his normal occupation may act as a Vaishya, may live by hunting, or may act as a brahmana by teaching others Vedic knowledge. But he may not, under any circumstances, adopt the profession of a shudra. Right? Like you see, it's not also an uncommon thing in the kind of modern. Yeah, I see it a lot. A lot of times, retired military. Many times they go into education.
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
You know, but they're not expecting much from it because they're already getting from there. But much of the time they go. So it's a natural place for the administrators to go. Because they know so much and this and that, though, you know, generally they're very strict in their teaching methods and all that. They may not be as broad-minded as a kshatriya, but the point is that it works nicely for them. Like, they wouldn't generally go in for rituals and doing yagyas and all that for others. Not that they can't do it, but they just wouldn't, because if anything's wrong, they'll freak out like that, you know. So, yeah, and how you say, rituals don't ask end very well if you've cut off the yajaman's head, right? So then in the class, you know, then you can, you know, it doesn't have that kind of, because the other one, because money's involved in this and material desires, and so therefore you get the problem of the stress that's there. But in teaching, then you won't get that. Mm-hmm. So then they can be peaceful. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Well, cutting off head is Vritrasura's pastime. Yajaman's head.
Yes, yes, yes. But it was a problem for him. It didn't work out, so. Yeah. So Indra was that. That was.
Indra means Vritrasura comes.
Oh, yeah, 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 that's the problem. Then Vritrasura will come, yeah. So. Yeah. Everything's covered in the Vedic literature. A Vaishya or mercantile man who cannot maintain himself may adopt the occupation of a shudra. Right? So the Vaishya can, but then when he can do his own duty, like I've seen very standard thing, Vaishyas that they're doing whatever in their area, but they want to shift or it's not working out, and so they're going into a new area. So they'll go in as a hired person, as a shudra, learn everything, and then after a year, then they'll go and open their own business.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point is that it's only a temporary thing. They'll do that, then they'll go back to their normal occupation. Like that. But the Brahmas and Kshatriyas, it's not recommended that they do that. But even if that's all that you can do, as Krishna said before, even if they're not functioning so nicely or, you know, in all aspects within the Varnashram system, it's still, they can develop devotion, you know, in their devotion and go back to Godhead. But it's not, you don't say, oh, it doesn't matter. No, it does matter. But it's just, you know, you do your best.
Yes.
So that makes sense. And a shudra who cannot find a master can engage in simple activities like making baskets and mats of straw. Right? So the shudra should work under a Brahma, Kshatriya, or Vaishya. If they can't, then they can do crafts that are of benefit for the Brahma, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, making mats, making baskets, things that people need, should be stuff they need.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Why only that order is given, like Shudra first preference is Brahman, then Kshatriya, then Vaishya? Like they have to work if given a preference.
Oh, why? Because if Shudra's working for a Brahman, he'll be more in touch with you know, religious and devotional things.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And so it's you know, it's a more it's your ideal situation for the shudra.
Mm.
Like that, because it's just, you know, naturally works for developing that higher, because if he gets attached to a Brahmin, then maybe in his next life he'll move up to that.
Okay.
You know.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. However, all members of society who have adopted inferior occupations in emergency situations must give up those substitute occupations when the difficulties have passed. Right? So any that comes up, that happens, then you accept. But when there's an opportunity that you could function in your own position, then one should do that.
But this will naturally happen because once nature is that, so one will go back to the...
Yes, but you can say, but let's say the Brahmin, he lives by teaching and all that, and from that he gets, you know, enough money to get by. But then there is no opportunity for teaching, so then he goes into business. Now he makes 10 times the amount he made as a teacher. Now the opportunity for teaching has come back again. Will he go back to teaching?
Part-time.
He'll do tutorials just to make that extra money on the side. Right? Before I teach the whole day, now I just teach for an hour and I get the same amount of money. Yeah, so. Yeah, he's gotten smarter, right? So.
All the smart Brahmins going to U.S. Yet one birthday.
Yes.
Going, never
Once return. Going, they never return. Yeah. Only the money comes back. Yes. Yes. Okay, so that's the consideration. Like they might, you know. But here it doesn't mention it. Krishna is not recommending here. But it also means that if need be, even the lower ones can take up a higher. Like I said, the Kshatriya could take up the duties of Brahmin. They didn't mention it for the Vaishyas. But I'm not sure. I think some other Dharma Shastras mentioned that could. But then like that, then the prestige and all that, they wouldn't want to come down from that, even though. So it's just a matter of if you get distracted by the mundane benefits that you get from that you wouldn't get in your position, then you may not take it up. That's why then in the Vedic system, then they would be reassigned. Mm-hmm. Their varna is reassigned. Mm-hmm. You know, so you even have nowadays, you get names, and they try to keep the prestigious aspect. Let's say someone's Brahmin family, but they marry into a Vaishya family. Then many times they'll put the two names together.
Yeah, they do that.
Yeah, why?
Why?
You understand? Why? Because of prestige. They want to show, yes, we're coming from a Brahmin background. Yes, but you're doing business now, and you married in a business family. But we're from Brahmin background. Yeah, but you're doing business. Yes, but we're from Brahmin background. Yeah, so like that. That's the whole point, is everybody should go back to their natural place, because otherwise this society doesn't work right. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Like that. I know a businessman who... devotee, his brother, you know, business family. The other ones do different things. He got into it, wasn't working in his natural occupation, you know, was there. So he got into education. So, you know, then when they do, like you see, Brahmins run an educational institution, generally it's small, and then with time it expands. And, you know, like that started off, I think it was Princeton, I think there were 9 students. You know, one professor and 9 students and all that. Now it'll be a huge school and things like that. And, you know, Harvard, all these guys would have started like that. But this one, he starts off, and within a few years he has 2,000 students. Right? Mm-hmm. But he makes so much money, he gets the best teachers, pays them the best salaries so they don't go away. But he also charges the best tuition fees. And that's what's above the table. Then there's, you want to get into the school, because the list, he has 2,000 students, there's 10,000 want to get in. You have to pay. When I was told about it in the, this would have been probably, yeah, like 84 or something. 84, 86, like that. He 2 lakhs to get in the school. So you can imagine what it is now. So 2,000 times 2 lakhs. That's just to get in the school. Then he's getting the tuition and all that. So he's doing really well. Right? But what kind of education will it be? Purely knowledge and skills. Purely mundane. It won't have any higher principles to it at all. So that's the difficulty for... Not that the Vaishya can't run an excellent... academic institution, but the character and all that, won't, you know. I mean, it's reduced. Only people with that amount of money get into the school, right? That, and because it becomes prestigious, you can tell their parents, well, if you don't behave, then, you know, we're going to have to, you have to remove your kid from the school, right? You know, and what it'll do, 2 things. 1, it'll discipline the child, and 2, it'll get extra money under the table. Oh, you know, we heard that you were planning on doing this new, sports field and all that. And, you know, we really care about the kids and want to see, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it works out from all sides.
Win-win.
Yes, win-win. Yeah, see, that's my whole thing. So one should stick to one's own occupation. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Occupations during calamity are described in 3 verses. He may engage in selling. but not selling liquor or salt or other forbidden items.
Salt?
I'm not sure.
Salt?
Huh?
Sugar?
Sugar is fine. Huh? It means they're not called. What do you call it? They're not called the guys that go out with the, you know, and fight on the battlefield. They're not called sugarers. Yeah, some salt. No, I think salt carries. There's something with the karma or stuff like that. There's something weird about salt. You can use salt. You just don't sell salt. If you know, it means yeah.
In salt, they don't exchange salt between homes.
No.
They can exchange anything, but not salt, and not given in the hand.
Yeah. Well, also, you don't take from the plate. Mm. Someone's there and you need salt, you don't take it off their plate. If they're finished and they've left, not stationed, then you could take. Then it's just a matter of, you know, if they're senior or equal like that, you wouldn't do that. Yeah, so salt, there's something far out about salt.
This
the spilling salt thing creates fights, and probably that's another thing, because if you deal in salt, you're going to be spilling salt all over, so it creates fights. That may be a reason.
They also say that debt increases, you know.
Debt increases if you sell salt.
Yeah.
Debt increases.
Maybe no salt.
Yeah, no salt. All those plants for all that Himalayan salt and all that, yeah. Okay. It says, or other forbidden items, you know, like that, you know, they say, meat, fish, eggs, you know, the whole, like that. In times of danger, he takes up the duties of a kshatriya. It is said that Gotama took up a sinful occupation when in danger. One may think that taking up kshatriya duties would be superior to vaishya duties. But according to the Lord, vaishya occupation is superior to kshatriya occupation for the Brahmin, because there's violence in kshatriya duties. Right? That's why also he doesn't do farming, because there's violence in farming. Right? Like that. That's pramrita, killing many living entities. They're bugs, but still. Like that. So that's why he'd first go for that, then only kshatriya. But it says, you know, yeah. One should not maintain himself by serving low persons. Right? So it should be, yeah, you have to just see that whatever position that they're going to deal properly and all those, that kind of aspect also. Mm-hmm. So whatever the situation, that it's going to be, you know, cultured, the dealings and everything. So, yeah. All these people, when free of difficulties, must revert to their original occupation. So you take it up, like Gotama took up sinful occupation in danger and then moved back to his regular duty. Like that. So, VT. Occupations during calamity were described. Now the obligatory actions of the householder are described. Started at Darshani 11, 17, 50. Sri Krishna continued. One in the Grihastha order of life should daily worship the sages by Vedic study, the forefathers by offering the mantra Swadha, the demigods by chanting Swaha, all living entities by offering shares of one's meal, and human beings by offering grains and water. Thus considering the demigods, sages, forefathers, living entities, and human beings to be manifestations of my potency, one should daily perform these five sacrifices. A household... Okay. So, for the devotees, if they're engaged in devotional service, then these things are taken care of automatically. Because you're going to study, you're going to be worshiping Krishna, you know, so that's going to take care of the forefathers and the demigods. You're going to be, you know, distributing prasad. You're going to be dealing properly with other living entities and this, and giving in charity and all these things like that. So they're all taken care of naturally by the devotional process.
Yes.
But for those who are not developed in the devotional process, they have to specifically see that these five categories are taken care of. Like that. And it's obligatory. It doesn't matter who you are. Like that. Means any householder. Like that. So one can say is, oh, well, we don't follow the Vedic culture, so it doesn't matter. No, it's Krishna's law.
Yes.
So, yeah. A householder should comfortably maintain his dependence either with money that comes of its own accord or with that gathered by honest execution of one's duties. Right? Because money may just come, because from previous life you just have something, it comes, then you take care like this. You don't waste. In other words, comfortably maintain. So whatever is your cultural standard, what's comfortable, that's the maintenance level.
Yes.
Right? So Brahmins may be very simple, but that it's comfortable within that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They have enough, you know, sufficient water, they have enough bathrooms, this and that. You know, other things may be less, but they have what they can be clean, they can do their puja, they can, you know, whatever it is that they require for all these things, that's there.
Means no anxiety.
Yeah, there's no anxiety. Now, for them, there may not be all kinds of other opulent things, but their brahminical activities they can do very nicely.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Well, what someone else, then they have to have other aspects.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like that. Yeah.
Hmm. When we say that it's comfortable, not uncomfortable.
Yes.
We measure, when we take the situation, we measure the men or women, according to whom. Or it doesn't really matter.
A householder should comfortably maintain his dependence, either with money that comes of its own accord or with gathered by honest execution of one's duties. According to one's means, one should... A householder should comfortably maintain his dependence.
So we measure on his ability and their satisfaction?
Yeah, because it says gathered by honest execution of one's duty. So it has to be within that. That's why the importance of the endeavor for satisfaction. But at the same time, is comfortably maintained, therefore he's sensitive to the needs of others. So that balance makes it work. Right? Means the family can't expect outside of what he can provide. But he should be providing his best and seeing that everybody's taken care of. But that means he still has to do all these different things, like you said, charity and all those things. That has to be part of it. Can't be, he makes this much, and so the family wants all that. No, there still has to be emergency and charity. Then within what's theirs, now within that, you see that it's done. Not that you don't spend it because of other things. You don't give it in charity and your family suffers, or you don't put it away and you're a miser, or you don't spend it on stuff that you don't need.
Yeah.
Like to do your puja you don't need Nike Jordan shoes.
to be on time.
Oh, I see. Okay, didn't think about that. Yeah, because you don't have a car, so we have to run, you know. So okay, then in that case, then yes, you get it. According to one's means, one should perform sacrifices and other religious ceremonies. Right? To one's means, what facility you have and this and that, with the level you have and like that. A householder taking care of many dependent family members should not become materially attached to them, nor should he become mentally unbalanced, considering himself to be the Lord. Right? So... unbalanced either in that he thinks he's doing such a fabulous job and isn't he special, or that he's, you know, having problem doing it and he's the one that has to do everything and it's all dependent on him and now what to do, and you understand?
Mm-hmm.
We're serve Krishna, we're dependent on Krishna, however Krishna takes care. We do our best, whatever facility, that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be more than that. Is that,
mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
We're all good? An intelligent householder should see that all possible future happiness, just like that which he has already experienced, is temporary. Right? Whatever you've experienced, it's temporary. Anything you will experience in the future will be similarly just as temporary.
Yes.
Not that what I've experienced now is temporary, but when I get rich, then it'll be eternal. No, it doesn't work like that. The association of children, wife, relatives, and friends is just like the brief meeting of travelers. With each change of body, one is separated from all such associates, just as one loses the objects one possesses in a dream when the dream is over. Right? No matter what you had in the dream, it's all gone. Right? Yeah. So that's why one shouldn't become. One deals properly. That's the balance of the Vedic culture, is that without attachment, you're dealing properly.
Yes.
Right? While if we're working with the motive pattern, it's only because of the benefits I'll get, I work hard. If I'm getting no benefits, I don't. No, it's the duties, you do them properly. That includes the physical, the mental, the intellectual, right? And then as devotees, then the consciousness.
Yes.
It's all of that. Deeply considering the actual situation, a liberated soul should live at home just like a guest, without any sense of proprietorship or false ego. Right? So just that if you're a guest in someone else's house, you're careful and sensitive to everything that's going on there.
Yes.
And you don't have that sense of proprietorship.
Yes.
Right? So then naturally it all belongs to Krishna, and it's being engaged in Krishna's service by you know, the direct activities and then the indirect activities of taking care of the family members.
Yes.
So it makes it very easy. If you think you're the Lord and Master of all you survey, you know, as long as you keep the curtains closed, because otherwise when you look out the window, that lawn outside is not actually yours, it's the local, you know, park. Yeah, so then, yeah. In this way, he will not be bound or entangled by domestic affairs. A household or devotee who worships me by execution of his family duties may remain at home, go to a holy place, or if he has a responsible son, take sannyas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, as he matures, then he can go into that vanaprastha state by staying at home.
Yes.
It's devotional, it's all nice there, it's not a problem. Or, he can go to a holy place. Mm-hmm. Right? And then in that situation, then take up the van. Or, he can, if he has a son who's responsible, who'll take care of all these things, take sannyas, mm-hmm. and like that. So it's just, the devotee can do any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. He's not remaining a grihasta, but you could be a vanaprastha in the home.
Yes.
Like that. Good.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Govinda.